Wednesday, March 18th. We're tracking a potential power vacuum in Iran, following reports of high-level political infighting, which is sending ripples from the Strait of Hormuz all the way to NATO headquarters. Following up on yesterday's look at the Pentagon's new Wall Street-style investment model, we're seeing that same efficiency-over-expertise trend hit the domestic front with some questionable White House appointments. Plus, the AI job cuts are starting to look less like a trim and more like a total structural demolition. Here is the news. The leadership structure in Iran is currently facing significant uncertainty. While initial rumors suggested a total collapse of command, the reality is a bit more nuanced. Ali Larijani, a former Speaker of Parliament and a longtime fixture in the security establishment, is reportedly being sidelined or removed from key advisory roles. Larijani has long been a top-tier candidate to eventually take over as supreme leader, and his displacement suggests a hardline power grab is underway. It's a messy situation. You have a regime that is increasingly isolated because its habit of attacking neighbors has pissed off the very diplomatic intermediaries they used to rely on. On the other hand, U.S. intelligence assesses that despite recent airstrikes by the U.S. and Israel that degraded their military, the regime's core structure is still standing. This internal friction is bleeding directly into the Strait of Hormuz. Iran is using the Strait as its primary lever to mess with global energy prices, specifically hoping to cause enough economic pain to rattle the U.S. presidency. But here's the catch. They actually have limited capacity right now. Some analysts suggest the strategy is to allow just enough oil through to keep things tense, rather than shutting it down completely and risking a massive diplomatic break with China, their biggest customer, who really doesn't have the patience for high oil prices threatening its growth. It's a delicate, slightly desperate game of chicken. Speaking of the Strait, it's becoming a massive friction point within NATO. President Trump is pushing for European and Asian allies to step up and secure these waterways themselves, arguing that the U.S. isn't even that dependent on Gulf energy anymore. It's the pay-your-fair-share argument, but with warships. However, European nations are basically saying, no thanks. They're refusing to send ships to the Strait, mostly because they're broke, or at least they've underinvested in their navies for so long they don't have much to send. Also, they're a bit busy with Russia. For European foreign ministers, Ukraine is an existential threat. A spat with Iran in a waterway thousands of miles away is a distraction they didn't ask for. While the U.S. tries to squeeze Iran, it's also turning the screws on Cuba. The island is currently in the middle of a catastrophic nationwide blackout, affecting 11 million people. This isn't just bad luck. It's a combination of a decaying power grid and a tightening of U.S. sanctions, which some critics are describing as a de facto oil blockade that has effectively choked the country's energy supply over the last few months. Hospitals are running out of medicine, food is rotting, and people are actually hitting the streets to protest. President Trump has been floating some pretty aggressive rhetoric about taking Cuba, especially after the U.S. seized Venezuelan assets. White House officials say they'd prefer a deal, and Cuba is already trying to play ball. They've released 51 prisoners and opened up some avenues for foreign investment. It's a grim picture, a humanitarian crisis being used as a very heavy blunt object for geopolitical leverage. Further east, Israel has moved from airstrikes to limited ground operations in southern Lebanon. The goal, according to Israel, is to push Hezbollah back and ensure their citizens can return to northern Israel. The reality on the ground is that 1 million Lebanese people have been displaced, and entire towns in the Bekaa Valley have turned into ghost towns. Israel's neighbors and allies, including Canada, France, and the UK, are watching this and seeing shades of Gaza. They're warning that this is heading toward a protracted, devastating conflict that nobody knows how to end. Meanwhile, the State Department is busy trying to get everyone to sign onto more sanctions against Iran's Revolutionary Guard and Hezbollah. It's a lot of moving parts, and most of them are on fire. Domestically, the administration is making some moves that are raising a lot of eyebrows, specifically regarding who is being put in charge of what. For instance, there's a federal planning commission overseeing a White House ballroom project. the new appointees reportedly have zero background in architecture, planning, or historic preservation. It sounds like a small thing, a ballroom, but it follows a pattern. We saw it at the Kennedy Center, where a major renovation was approved by a board that didn't exactly have the traditional credentials. The concern here isn't just about bad wallpaper. It's about the precedent of ignoring expertise in favor of, well, whatever else they're looking for. On the health front, a judge just threw a wrench into the works. They issued a temporary halt on Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s plan to overhaul childhood vaccine recommendations and advisory panels. The ruling basically suggests the administration might have overstepped its legal authority. This is going to be a long, 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 drawn-out legal fight over who gets to set scientific standards and how federal health advice is actually formed. It's the kind of institutional tug-of-war that usually happens behind the scenes, but now it's front and center. In the tech world, NVIDIA is currently trying to build the future while everyone else tries to find a place to plug it in. They've got huge revenue projections, but the market is actually a bit skeptical. The problem isn't the chips. Everyone wants the chips. The problem is the AI factories, or data centers, needed to house them. NVIDIA is now trying to coordinate the entire supply chain themselves because the rest of the ecosystem can't keep up. They're doubling down on integrated solutions like the Grace Hopper chip to try and lower costs and stay ahead of the competition. It's a weird spot to be in. You're so successful that your biggest obstacle is the fact that the physical world isn't fast enough for your software. Finally, we have some long-term warnings that are easy to ignore but probably shouldn't be. New research is linking climate change to a massive spike in physical inactivity. Basically, it's getting too hot to go outside and move. This shift toward a sedentary lifestyle is projected to cause hundreds of thousands of additional deaths by 2050 from things like heart disease and diabetes. As usual, lower-income countries are getting hit the hardest because they don't have the air conditioning to hide from the heat. On the slightly lighter side of things, and I use that term loosely, it turns out sharks aren't the lonely killers we thought they were. New research shows they actually have complex social lives, forming bonds and maintaining relationships. So while the world feels like it's fracturing, at least the sharks are making friends. While NVIDIA's trying to build the hardware, the actual human cost of this AI pivot is becoming impossible to ignore. The shift from AI being a neat parlor trick to a fundamental restructuring of the American workforce is no longer a down-the-road conversation. It's happening right now, and the numbers are starting to get ugly. Looking back at the data from 2024, we saw over 45,000 AI-related layoffs, and that trend is accelerating into 2025. Reports indicate another 40,000 job cuts are expected in the near future. This isn't just a general economic tightening, it's a massive pivot in how the biggest players in tech are spending their money. We've seen companies like Meta cut thousands of jobs in recent years, while simultaneously pouring tens of billions into AI infrastructure. Across the board, five of the largest tech firms are projected to spend a staggering $700 billion on AI capital expenditures. They are essentially moving money out of the human salary column and into the data center and hardware column. Now here's the kicker. Companies aren't doing this because AI is currently doing the work of those people. They're doing it because they are betting on agentic capabilities. The idea that AI will soon act as autonomous agents. Right now, there is a massive gap between what AI could do and what it's actually doing. In fields like math and computer science, AI has a theoretical coverage of 94% of tasks, but in practice, we're only seeing it used for about 33%. In legal and business sectors, that actual usage drops below 20%. The reality on the ground is that while CEOs are spending billions, 90% of employees are still just using AI for basic tasks, essentially treating a supercomputer like a slightly better version of Google Search. Honestly, it's a shitty situation for the workforce. Companies are gutting staff to build a future that the current workforce isn't even close to being ready for. We're looking at a complete erosion of the traditional career ladder, specifically for entry-level and middle management roles that are being hollowed out before they even start. And that brings us to how people are actually interacting with these tools. there's a growing divide between what some are calling learning machines and lazy machines. On one side, you have people using AI to expand their knowledge, asking complex questions and using it as a strategic coach. On the other, you have people using it as a passive shortcut to offload thinking entirely. This isn't just a productivity tip, it's a survival strategy. As AI agents integrate into teams, they're starting to act as performance coaches, pulling data and even critiquing human work. There's a whole new business model emerging here. Firms that don't just upskill humans, but focus on training the AI to work with the humans they have left. We're also seeing this play out in the digital economy. In the world of search, AI is creating a winner-take-all environment. According to recent data, the number one spot in AI search results captures almost all the revenue. If you're number two, you're basically invisible. It's the Wild West for advertisers, too. Early data shows that ads on ChatGPT can actually offer better lead quality and lower costs than Meta, though they're still trailing Google. But even as the AI-ification of everything accelerates, there's a ceiling. We're seeing experiments like Harumo AI, an AI-led startup, that show where the wheels fall off. AI agents are incredibly fast, but they are terrible at nuance. They lack contextual understanding, which is a fancy way of saying they don't understand how people actually work. When Harumo hired its first human intern, the takeaway was clear. Humans still want authentic connection, even in a bot-driven environment. The takeaway here is pretty dry. The efficiency we're gaining comes with a massive hidden cost. We're seeing a decline in foundational knowledge because students are using AI for everything. And we're seeing physical tolls, like increased eye strain and dry eye syndrome, from being tethered to these systems. We're trade-offing human expertise for agentic speed, and the bill is starting to come due. Switching gears to something where the product is actually showing some growth, even if the rosters are a total revolving door. College basketball just wrapped its regular season with some massive numbers. Viewership across roughly 1,400 men's and women's games jumped 17% year over year. The growth was even sharper on the men's side, which saw a 20% spike in the ratings. What's interesting here is that this happened while the sport is basically in a state of permanent upheaval with the transfer portal. Apparently, we don't care. The data suggests the product is actually more resilient than the old-school purists thought. People are tuning in for the jersey, not just the names on the back. Moving to the ice, the NHL and the Players Association just announced the locations for the World Cup of Hockey. They've awarded the North American sites to Calgary and Edmonton. It's a significant win for Canada. Look, this is a calculated move to throw a bone to the most loyal and, frankly, most obsessed part of the hockey fanbase. The league is leaning into that deep Canadian hockey culture, which is smart because that's where the guaranteed money is. It's a nice reminder that despite the NHL's constant thirst for Sunbelt expansion, they still know who pays the bills. Finally, the World Baseball Classic ended up being a massive success, which is now forcing a bit of a conversation at the top of the sport. The tournament saw huge fan support and significant investment from the players themselves. The WBC's performance is putting some pressure on Major League Baseball. Now that we've seen how much national pride can move the needle, the owners and the players have to figure out if they're going to actually cooperate on things like the Olympics. Owners don't want their multi-million dollar assets getting hurt in a midsummer tournament. But the fans clearly want to see international stakes that actually mean something. While we're talking about peak performance, it turns out you might be wasting your time on that hour-long jog. Recent research into high-intensity interval training, or HIIT, is basically nuking the idea that you need an hour on the treadmill. The data shows that short, vigorous bursts of activity, specifically sprint interval training, can yield the same physiological gains as those long, boring cardio sessions. Specifically, these intense protocols improve your VO2 max in just a few weeks. It also fixes your metabolic flexibility, which is just a fancy way of saying your body gets better at switching between burning fat and carbs. Then there's the exercise snack concept. We're talking seconds of all-out effort, repeated a few times a week. It solves the I don't have time excuse, which honestly is the only reason most of us don't work out. It's a bit of a middle finger to the zone 2 obsession, which is apparently hard for most people to even calculate accurately anyway. On the business side, there's a push toward prioritizing mission over margins to avoid burning out. David Heinemeier Hansson, the guy behind Ruby on Rails, is pushing a philosophy of unapologetic conviction, basically using constraints to force creativity. He argues that staying small and high margin allows for reckless innovation. It's a play for crystallized intelligence, using experience to refine ideas rather than just chasing data-driven growth until you're miserable. Which, let's be real, sounds a hell of a lot more sustainable than the alternative. Rounding things out with a few more headlines you might have missed. First, London's homicide solve rate is sitting at over 95%. They're crediting that to a massive camera network paired with some pretty aggressive facial recognition tech. Look, it's a win for public safety, but it's also a hell of a lot of surveillance to swallow just to feel like the cops are doing their jobs. Over in the Premier League, Manchester United is basically a case study in why you don't build a house without a foundation. They spent the summer panic buying players without a sporting director or a CEO in place, and now they're paying for it on the pitch. It turns out that throwing money at a problem doesn't actually work if nobody knows who's supposed to be steering the ship. On a nerdier note, the 311 system is doing way more than just taking complaints about potholes. It's turned into a massive data feedback loop that cities are using to map out exactly where resources are failing in real time. It's actually a pretty elegant way to make urban planning less of a guessing game, assuming the city actually listens to the data. And finally, the situation with Iran is looking like the biggest shock to the global energy system we've seen since 1979. We're talking about the potential for oil prices to double, which would basically light every current GDP and inflation model on fire. It's a shitty outlook, and honestly, the market isn't even close to pricing in that kind of chaos yet. The common thread today seems to be a lot of people in high places making big bets and hoping the infrastructure catches up later. Whether it's Nvidia's AI factories or the White House's new ballroom planners, it's a bold strategy. Let's see if it pays off. Catch you tomorrow.